When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Ideas demand action, philosophy thrives through practice, and talk only flourishes when it inspires meaningful deeds. Welcome to the Talk Doesn't Cook Rice podcast with myself, John Staskowski, and Danny Massaro, where we explore thought-provoking concepts and provide practical insights to enrich modern life. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Right, Danny, spiral dynamics. We're going to explore the work that originated back in the 50s and 60s with a psychological researcher called Claire Graves, G-R-A-V-E-S. And it's Claire, C-L-A-R-E. It's always annoyed me a bit because he is a bloke, but you always picture him as a woman when you hear his name. But Claire Graves, and he is a man. And he was actually a colleague of Abraham Maslow, who many people know through Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the classic pyramid that a lot of people see. And Graves was knocking around at the same time, teaching psychology in the university. And he was just had questions about what is it that, I suppose, motivates humans? What is it about human development? There's all these models out there. So there's people like Freud and Maslow and Piaget and these guys. And it's like, there's all these models, but none of them really explain it all. And he just went looking for answers in many ways of what is it that explains how humans develop and evolve. And that's the route he went down. Ultimately, what he came up with was just this notion of a spiraling higher order system of biopsychosocial aspects that are all interweaving and involved with how we develop as human beings. And he came up with a model, which he termed at the time as the emergent cyclical double helix model of adult biopsychosocial behavior. Bit of a mouthful, but that does what it says on the tin. That's what he was getting at. So that double helix of a spiral, imagine like a DNA strand curling round into there as it goes up. Later on, a couple of researchers, Don Beck and Chris Cowan, who were friends with Graves at the time, took that model on a little bit. So they were working with him. And then when Graves died, I think in the mid 80s, they just took it on and built on that model, which ended up becoming spiral dynamics. So essentially they took Graves's model and added some colours and a bit different language. They brought in some of Richard Dawkins' work on genes and how they work, and they just turned it into a bit of a more reader-friendly model. Just looks a bit more practical and usable, which became spiral dynamics. And that's what we're going to have a chat about today. Probably the next little thing to mention, which just gives it a bit of context. If we think of genes, G-E-N-E-S, not like Levi's or whatever, but actual genes, they're sequences of biological information that self-replicate. So blue eyes create blue eyes and your genes get passed on and they self-replicate in that way. Memes, so M-E-M-E-S, they're bits of sociological information that spread within a culture through things like imitation and copying and sharing. And that's a key distinction, really, with this model. The notion of memes being these things that affect our worldview and how we see the world. So the environment that we're in and what's going on around us gives us, in many ways, a core value system, gives you a belief structure, a way of just viewing and seeing the world and organizing how you think about things. And these guys gave that name the V-meme. So it's the V-meme is a container for memes. And these are important when it comes to spiral dynamics, because as we spiral up the model that we're going to talk through, these levels change and these V-memes change. So your worldview essentially will change as you work your way up the spiral. So that's a little bit of a whistle stop, probably overly simplistic context setting. Danny, how did you get into spiral dynamics? And then we'll start going through the levels.
Yeah, well, I learned it on a course I did back in 2004, all about human, you know, psychology and development and so on. Graves came in, we did this Ken Wilber model that had lines, levels, types and states and quadrants. What, that's something else we might look at, but this was the levels part, and it was the sort of levels of your thinking. It's not what type of person you are. It's more about how you think and what your values are. And what Graves did, he identified by asking the question to students. He just kept asking them, his students in the late 50s, come on, guys, what do you think is a psychologically healthy human adult? What constitutes being healthy as an adult mentally and living a good life, you know? But what, you know, what are they thinking? What are these people who do really well? What makes them tick? How come they do well? So we kept throwing these questions. And the reason he did that was because he would teach psychology at university, and he'd teach all these different psychologists. And at the end of the year, the kids would just say, well, who's the best? Which one's the best psychologist? Like, is it the behavior person, you know, like Skinner? Are they right? Is it the humanist people? Is it the psychoanalysis people about adults? Like, what's the best thinker? So he said, I can't tell you. And he said, as a kid growing up myself, Graves said, that he had the same problems. And that's why he got into psychology. He actually lived on a farm, and he used to work a lot with horses. And he always knew that even horses had temperaments and genetics and personalities that influenced how they responded to certain conditions and so on. He said, and then when I learned more about psychology, I knew that psychology and the way you socialized, hence, you know, that always affects how you're always in the world and trying to navigate what's going on, particularly as an adult. Because as an adult, he said that you get existential. So he said, my model is also existential, and it's also phenomenological, another way, which is basically my, you know, my view of it, my subjective sort of inside outlook, look at the world. So it's strange. It's existential because I'm starting to think through time and what everything means, but it's also biological because it's like you are like your genetics, as your genes, you know, you are also like a biological system with chemicals. And you know that if you have a chemical imbalance, your mental health is affected. You know that if you've got lots of oxytocin in your system, you're more about socializing and being friendly, like mothers who have babies, they raise their oxytocin levels so that they get a bond with the child. So you know that like you're a chemical system, you're a social system, and you're a sort of weird internal system that's making sense of everything looking out. So he said, I said back to his students, like, I've been thinking the same thing all my life. I'm just properly complicated. I don't know. So let's do some research on it. So all those questions that came in off all those students for years, in 1961, he started asking the 18 different groups of students. They all wrote essays and answers to these questions, some one-liners, some this. And then he basically got neutral people to try and put them into groups and categories that make sense of all these essays, and certain words and certain things and started to come up. And he basically found that two main distinctions that came up were express yourself versus sacrifice yourself. So healthy humans would have a mix of being able to like express the personality in themselves and me and my world, but they would also, you know, like, I am important, what I want is important, you know, my one life, I need to go and strive and I need to do this and I want this and I think this is important to me. But then there was sacrifice self, which was more about we are important, it's about us, it's about the collective. And his friend Maslow, who he'd cover for in lectures, who'd done the Maslow needs pyramid, he went to Maslow and said, look, mate, he said, there's a problem with your model. He said, I'm finding things that aren't on your model, because all your model is about needs, my needs, self-actualization, you know, my health, my this. He says, but I'm finding all this stuff that actually humans are a bit feeling a lot more healthy when they're prepared to just sacrifice themselves. And then sort of jump back to, I am important, I'm not important, I am important, I'm not important. And I think we can all relate to that, just that distinction. You sometimes get caught in life feeling too selfish and that you're not giving enough. And then sometimes you feel like you're giving everything, but you're not having the, you know, you're not getting enough, you're not doing enough for yourself. That can be with your family, your children, your career, your relationship with your job, you know, and all these things. So I thought that was amazing. You know, when I first heard all this, and what Graves then kind of said was, once he'd got these distinctions and he saw them as levels, but they were levels and like a hierarchy that you could go up, 6-7 levels that you could go up and beyond. He didn't know the levels beyond 7, but that was something else he said to Maslow, was that you've limited your pyramid. He says, it's not a pyramid. There's no peak to it. And Maslow did end up admitting, you're right, there is no peak to human development. We don't know in 20, 30, 40, 50,000 years where it can go. So I was wrong to put a triangle on it, you know, a pyramid. So that was interesting. So straight away for me, he got these levels in place and he could show how every one of these levels was vital to your adult development. And they went from me to we, back to me, to we, to me, to we. So selfish to collective, selfish to collective. And then obviously we'll get to they came along and gave them colors. So it's really easy to understand. And the reason they gave them colors was that it didn't look like one was better than the other, because every single level is just as important as each other level. But the problem is when you get stuck at one level, like say it's an elevator or whatever, a spiral elevator, when you get stuck at one level, all you can see in the world is everything through that level. So yeah, it for me, it was just been really, really powerful. And I use it sometimes consciously, but often unconsciously all the time when I'm working with players and stuff, and it helps.
I think a good or a fine point, which I don't think you mentioned there, which I loved about the way he did it and was a key thing, is he was asking these thousands of students over the years, yeah, but he kept revisiting with them. So he wouldn't just ask them and that's their answer and then see you later. He'd then be checking back in with those people over many years, which then gave him that sense of actually people's worldviews change through time as well. So you can imagine, I don't know, like a 19-year-old undergrad student,
yeah,
get their perspective on like what's going on, what makes a happy human and those things. And then you ask them 10 years later, they're probably, and he was seeing actually, yeah, this is the levels that people go through over time as well when they're moving through that development.
Yeah, he said humans have a big capacity to recalibrate their worlds based on their circumstances and their culture and type of life. And he said, therefore, it is just an overwhelming probability that humans, the best humans, are adaptable. It's not the strongest, it's the ones that can adapt all the times to the levels. And he, you know, he used things like examples of biological viruses, social systems, these things like the healthiest systems that have ever been, and the Darwin bit, you know, that it's evolution, it's the most adaptable. And he said the human psychology is a constantly readapting, recalibrating, adaptable system based on its environments all the time. And that's what I liked about it. It's very practical, it's very pragmatic, and it's not just idealistic mental stuff. It's very much based in the real situation of your life, and you can see how culture presses on you. If the culture is at a certain level, or the place that you work is at a certain level of you know, values, it's almost impossible to escape it, because to survive in that system, you have to kind of be that level. So in a way, he said it was a healthy human sometimes to not be too idealistic and adapt for the environment you're in at that time, because that's what it needs and takes at that time. It's first things first. You've got to get to the first thing first and do it. But over time, if you can change cultures, if you can maneuver your lives and create yourself opportunities, a psychologically human being, a healthy human, starts to feel the flexibility and development that they can choose any level at any stage and set up their lives so that they have that fluidity and flexibility to sort of say the most important thing now is just surviving. The most important thing now is that we're all happy. The most important thing now is that I defend myself and it's, you know, and I survive and make lots of money. The most important thing now is that I give myself to a rules and a religion and so on. So we'll get into the different levels. But essentially, Graves is a very pragmatic, psychology is adaptable as you grow up.
The beauty of it for me is all that you've just described, it's ultimately existential, isn't it? That's what it's grounded in. He's definitely a psychologist, but it's, for me, this is like proper existential philosophy in many ways as well. It's like the lived life of what's going on in front of my eyes, which is always going to resonate with us. Right, let's dive into the levels, and it's probably worth, for people who are listening, if you can, just get like a Google Images, just Google spiral dynamics, go on images, and you'll have, there'll be millions of the spiral, and you'll see that might just help you contextualize it a little bit as we're speaking. But the bottom level on there is the beige color, and this is very much concerned with survival. So this, if we think of human development, because this model is as much about how cultures and communities develop as it is individuals, this is maybe 100,000 years ago, let's call it, where your main concern was just to survive. All you were bothered about is your primary needs, making sure they're satisfied, very instinctual, just acting on instinct, very basic You might have knocked around with a very loose band of people, but it was pretty much just you on your own, and all you were doing was trying to improve your chances of survival, pretty much. That's the main dilemma that you've got in that stage. How am I going to survive and stay alive here? So for you, Danny, what's the relevance of the beige stage for you? Like, how is that? Give us some examples of why that might be useful to consider, even today in Western culture, where people have got time to listen to us rabbit on a podcast.
So this would be like back in first ever humans alive in the cave, okay, literally on your own trying to survive and not die. So for me, beige was like bringing our baby home and just thinking, stay alive. You know, breathe, you know, you're going, oh my God, eat, keep warm, sleep, stay alive. And, you know, when you're really ill, you know, so that's your value. The most important thing, values are what's most important to me. Beliefs are different, but values essentially can be defined as what is important to me, what is most important now. So the most important value in beige is staying alive. Now, in modern times, they think, well, you know, we're always alive and, you know, we're not under like wreck, really. We can always get some calories in and some sleep and some warmth and so on. But not everybody, yeah, you know, homeless people and so on. But for me, this would be talking to, say, athletes and saying, right, have you had have you been resting? Have you had your break? Are you feeling energized in terms of calories and rest? And have you slept well? You know, your basic needs, you know, and you might take that back down to cellular level, you know, in bioenergetics, like is your basic ATP system operating well? Are the fires burning? Have you got any illnesses you need to shake off? You know, even injuries and so on like that. So if you're, you know, in something like sport or anything, if you're not optimal in yourself, in the beige needs, and you just neglect them, you know, diet and all these things, then eventually it's going to catch up with you. And that's the very, very foundation of the whole spiral. So, you know, miss this out at your peril, because in the end it will get you.
Cool. So that's beige. And then there comes a point, and let's say this emerged 50,000 years ago. So we've moved on another 50,000 years just in that survival stage.
Yeah.
Where you start looking around and you think, I tell you what, I could do with a bit more safety here. And you start looking around and you're like, well, hang on. Why don't a few of us start clubbing together and clanning together? And it'll just be way more secure. We'll maybe have more regular food that we can all share with each other. So this is the stage of the tribe, like kinship with other people, clans coming together. And it's very much about seeking safety. So the warm nest of the tribe is just safe and like, I can just breathe a little bit and relax. And I'm not living on my wits every single day, just trying to stay alive. And also purple, yeah, at this stage is, this is where things like mysticism perhaps and magic and elements of superstition can come in. So if you imagine a tribe where it's like, well, we're praying to the rain gods or something because we've had a drought and we need a bit of rain, and like they're all in on that. They genuinely want to please the gods or please the spirits. There are certain things that happen in the world, so they're very into that, very into the supernatural. I suppose modern aspects might be things like astrology, ghosts, the spirits, voodoo, demons, all those things where it's very out there and it's very like, oh God, that's where we need to keep them happy, because if we don't keep them happy, bad things will happen to us. So that happens in this purple stage as well, which again, the modern person can look at and just think, what a bunch of idiots, like what are they doing? As if there's that's important, as if the, I don't know, the carrot spirit is going to help my carrots grow better on the allotment this year if I start flipping, leaving a sacrifice or something.
Yeah.
But that's what they were into. And it's actually still one that, again, a bit like the beige, people maybe forget a little bit and don't appreciate enough these days. So we did an episode on nostalgia, didn't we? And you were asking the question recently, yeah, I wonder if nostalgia actually, is that a bit of that for us, where it gives you that sense back into the past where you kind of came into the world with your tribe and like old family members and the elders, like, you know, you maybe had grandparents and great-grandparents who were like, you just looked up to them as if, God, yeah, like they're the big dog in the tribe. And we're maybe missing a little bit of that now. So
when you're in purple, you know, the world doesn't make much sense. It's a bit scary. So your security, you get together with people, your tribe, and I'll be safe in the tribe in here, because out there, God knows what's going to happen. It's scary. So you do prayers, you know, in like superstitions and your rituals, and obviously like metaphorically praying to the gods. So this is like, this can be as simple as leaving a carrot for Santa and with your kids and it's pie and hope that he come, you know, and it's the wonderment and the magic and it's quite good because it's about us being safe together, but it's like not, it's innocent as well. It's not down to us. It's the world could decide, the gods could decide it's my day or it's not my day. So it's like fate. When people say, oh, it's fate and it's collective. I went to the football on Saturday and it was just good being back at the ground, at the Man City's ground, watching the different away team, the home team, the pies, the beers, the families, you know, the scarves, the songs, the chanting. It's all a load of, you know, but it's tribal and people come together and you're praying that your team's going to win and you need a bit of luck and all this. And you think if you sing songs and you pray and cross your fingers and hope and that your team's going to, you know, not lose and all this stuff. So it's kind of good. And I would say this is huge for modern players who in sport that, in my opinion, just jump straight to the orange meme, which is success, which is later up the spiral. They miss this out and forget it. And they lose their excitement. They lose that childish magic of literally just running after an object or trying to win. Or I think with purple, it's sacrifice yourself for no other reason than you just do. The gods demand it and that's it. So it is very pagan. You know, it is in The Wicker Man on the nasty side, the Wicker Man film, where they sacrifice the policeman Edward Woodward is like too much purple. It's just stuck in paganism. Purple, if purple is the only thing that exists, it's like the Mayans, you know, and sacrificing people so it rains and stuff. And so it's brutal if it's just that, and it's all trapped in weird magic and druids and all them silly things. But it's a vital part of life, and it's really important. And you know, if you miss out on this ability to sacrifice yourself for no other reason than you just should, like you just run in a game of sport, you just do. That's what the sports gods demand. You just have to give of yourself. And I often wonder this with the New Zealand All Black rugby team. They seem to have this spirit stuff going on. They do the haka and they try and connect with the history and their elders. And it's this kind of like, bow down to your elders no matter what. The elders are in charge and the spirits a bit above them are in charge. And that's it. If that's missing, you only sacrifice yourself for self-gain and it's a different energy. So purple is really important. I've helped a lot of sports people by getting back into some purple naturally, and then they can go move on from there. So it's the second brick in the spiral, really. It's the second place, and it's, again, you don't have it, it's all going to come tumbling down above.
So that's purple. Now, people will have, if you remember what we said earlier, we've done a bit of a swing there. So we've gone from real individualistic focus at beige, and then we swung over to the collective, didn't we, with purple. Well, now the next stage up, you swing back again. So that's that spiraling back and forth between I and we. So the next stage up is red. And this is where you sort of maybe start looking around and you go, do you know what? I've had enough of this tribe. Like, I want a bit more of me involved in this. I'm going to go back in for myself. So this again is where you start going egocentric again. And it's like, no, I'm going to do what I want to do. I want what I want and I'm going to go and get it. So this is like willpower and it's quite energetic. It's action. It's dominating others and taking what you want from them rather than like you sharing things as an example. So it's like empires now. So the Roman Empire is an example of like, right, the red comes up from that, away from that tribal aspect. Very passionate, very rebellious, pretty impulsive, maybe, where you're just like, right, if I want that, I'm getting it, and I'll do whatever I need to get it. So that means you might exploit people, you might do them over and try and get things over on them to get what you want. So this is the stage of, in some ways, dictators, gang leaders. The mafia is a classic red stage example. Con artists. The sort of, you were saying about Leo the other day, the terrible twos in a way, isn't it? That's that red stage where it's all about me and I want what I want and I'm going to express what I want and I'm going to go after it. So it's very prison culture, survival of the fittest, top dog is like the top dog and that's it. Pretty macho, I suppose. And that can have good things and bad things to it. So there are good, positive, healthy elements of red. that, again, like we're saying, you probably need. And the idea is with all of these levels, you don't miss any. You have to transcend each one, but then integrate it within your worldview before you move up to the next one. So there are aspects of red that, again, you need that can be helpful. Yeah, there are also really unhealthy ones that if you have too much of this, it's probably not going to end well in culture. So how do you see the red one, Danny?
Well, again, like if you've been in a society where, you know, someone's kill or be killed in a way, in all the different levels of that. So if someone comes and burgles your house and you don't know how to stand up for yourself, then it's not going to end well. You know, this was the tribes sort of like going, yeah, we're all tribes, but we're going to be the strongest tribe. So we're going to step up. And it's like the young bucks coming over and taking power and wanting things for themselves from the elders. You know, it's and in terms of the two-year-olds, that's like they start to realize there's not enough resources for everyone all the time. So they need it now. You know, I want what I want. And it's kind of good. It's an important stage. And Piaget did a lot of this stuff through the childhood stages. Like Graves never said, I'm not going to go near where children develop and so on, because I haven't studied that. But even the Piaget Foundation, it's definitely in the Portugal one, said they just saw Graves an extension of Piaget's work. It's like all about levels and stages kids go through and then adults, you know. But essentially, yeah, in sport, you know, I see one of the things I see with, for example, I work with quite a few Egyptian squash players and they've taken over the world of squash, which is a very, like, bit like boxing, really. You're in that ring together. There's no net in squash. You're right next to each other. The energy is important. Obviously, that what squash you do is like boxing, the punches you throw. But if you've come from a culture where it's been permitted that you can stand up for yourself and fight back, and maybe you've been hit a few times and knocked out, but then you took your revenge back and you've learned how to stand up for yourself, and it's also admired by the culture and just accepted, you just fight for your corner, you know, you're not chastised for hitting back the bully and so on like that. So basically, if you've never been taught red and you've bypassed it and you're even going to struggle with basic assertion, never mind aggression. So you become frightened of aggression in yourself because it's not a value of yours or your family or anybody. So you're like, oh no, any aggression's bad, and you never learn it. Now, personality can come into that as well, and obviously, but Graves were just saying, like, healthy human has it in them to be red, assertive, me, I want it, I'm taking it. I want to do my desires, what I want now. And obviously, when you're in a time of history where it's about the collective, that is really frowned upon. So, you know, that's what red is. And in sport, you know, I need players to be hard and stand up. Serena Williams had an ability coming from Compton to be red. Not a lot of, say, male American players nowadays who have just been, you know, quite rich kids, really, have been always looked after all their lives. They're great and they have all the science and all the support, but do they have that really deep anger in them that, say, Djokovic has, you know, when it comes down to it? Or even in Nadal, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule, but that's the idea. I see one of the reasons a lot of Egyptian squash players are still brilliant, because purple and red is really still powerful in the Middle Eastern countries. And it kind of helps a game like squash and possibly boxing, you know, with Chile and Mexico and these countries where you come from the streets and the ghettos and, you know, you just nails MMA. You just have it in you. It's a value. It's valuable to be nails and tough and fight for yourself. Very, very difficult to pick that up if you've never learned it. It is in your system. We all know we can have reactive red. We can all get angry and blow up, but it's more like that's more of a reaction sometimes and a frustration. You just want this in there as a vital block. So that's important, red.
And I suppose people, that can end in tears, because you get, on the unhealthy side, people can get reckless. They just disregard consequences. Oh, it's just like, well, very self-centered, very immediate gratification. Well, I want this now. Screw the consequences. I'm doing it because I want to do it.
Yeah, it's a bully, isn't it? It's just the ultimate. Stuck in red. What's the problem with being stuck only in red? Bully, aggressor.
Yeah.
I'm taking everything and you're not having anything. Terrible, really, when you're stuck in it.
So then we spiral up from there into the next level, which is blue. So we're back into this collectivist self-sacrificing mode again. So this is where things get very absolutist. There's lots of rules. We want order. We want processes. We want authorities. There's hierarchies. Everyone must be obedient and follow the rules. And there is truth, and that's the truth. And you just like believe in that, and away you go. So it brings stability. There's morality is heavily involved in it, and it's very much keeping the collective in line. We can't have all these red maniacs going off and being red and just like causing chaos. So it brings it back into a bit more order. So this is things like belief in God, you know, religion and like heavy societal structures, fundamentalism, Bible Belt sort of vibe. It's that it's very structured and very, very traditional in a way. And again, it's you're sacrificing the now for the future in some ways. It's like, right, rather than just taking everything in the moment, it's like, no, do this and I'll delay gratification. I'll be a good boy now, because then in the future that'll pay off and those sorts of things. So very disciplined culture, very much about accountability, honor and guilt and those sorts of things are heavy at that blue level. And everything's in many ways black and white thinking, isn't it? It's like, don't question anything. Don't you be challenging this. This is just the way it is. Absolute truth is the truth, and that's it. Black and white. There's no grey areas. This is the way things are. Again, there are pros and cons, I suppose, to this blue level as well. So healthy things for me that I think it's like, all right, yeah, it's actually good to have a bit of self-control and self-discipline and dig into some like hard work and like just like, yeah, I've got to get stuff done and I've got to be strict with myself and on message. Things like justice are usually a good thing for us, aren't they? Like a sense of justice in the world that like if you do good things, you'll be rewarded. And if you're bad, you'll get punished. That tends to jive with us. Things like communication as well. Like you just say it how it is. You don't waffle around the thing. It's just like, right, this is this. Let's do that. That's what's happening. But you flip it, you might get then things like authoritarianism rising up. Things get too rigid. People are too judgmental of each other. People are too scared of the unknown and chaos and things, because it's like, no, let's just keep it as it is. Let's look back and go back to how things used to be. Let's keep it there. So this might be conservative party in very tradition. Let's conserve things as they are. That's it. So you might get a lot of bureaucracy and resistance to change and those sorts of things. So that's blue. What are you thinking with blue, Danny? How does it apply for you in the real world?
Well, it's funny because it was like whereas red is in the jungle, this is in society. So this was the rule books. This was like that's chaos in the jungle. We need some rule books, and they were, the Bible was one, man, another one. So you just follow this. So yeah, in sports, it's like in life, it's you're good at processes, you want rules, you want to follow training programs, you want to know the right way to do something, you know, it's discipline. The police are supposed to be a blue enforcing agency. It's conformity, you know, conform and you'll be rewarded, you know, be a good person now, you'll be rewarded in heaven. Slave morality, Nietzsche's slave morality, be a good person and one day you'll get the rewards for it. So it's about the whole society really. And yeah, with sports, I tell, you know, this is where you'd say to players, look, you've got to get your discipline. This is like in a sports match, I represent this as tactical discipline, concentration, stick to your job, do your job. I've told you what to do, follow it, follow orders. Very rigid. There's a master plan here. We've worked out it is. Stick to it. Very important part of sport. You know, very important part of life. You know, you have a regime. You're following a diet or a system, whatever it is, whatever your rules are, whatever the code is for you. Go through that and stick to it. And it's very important discipline. Partly because it's all a collective team. You all know your jobs. You all do what you do. So yeah, blue. You know, it's important. But again, you get stuck there. You're a fundamentalist. All you can see is your rule book, your Bible, your book. You can't see anybody else's book, which is weird, really, because you all kind of agree on the principle of the blue thing. It's just that there's only room for my blue. There's not room for your blue, you know. So with this in academia, didn't we, a lot, you know, with strict research regulations and everything has to be evidenced and it all has to be made. You can't be having, you know, stuff that isn't regulated and all that. So
bureaucracy central, admin, administration,
process, admin. Yeah. You know,
that's blue. One, something you just mentioned there as well, Danny, it's important to realize at each of these levels that we've talked about so far in what people will find is this first tier of thinking, you tend to think every other level is just a bit of a dickhead. you just don't agree with him. So each of these levels, blues will look at reds and they just like, it's like, oh, they're idiots. They're wrong. We're right. That's how it's very confrontational in that sense. But this is now, we're into about 800 years ago, say, and this is probably still the dominant mode or the dominant stage most of us are in at this point. So we move from blue up to orange. And this is, again, we're back into that individualistic self-expressing. And orange is all about, right, I'm sick of all those rules and these like hierarchies and things. I'm going it alone again. So it's now again about autonomy, self-interest, growth. I'm going to be as good as I can be. It's all about me having my success. I've got my own ambitions for how I want to live my life and what I want to achieve. And you might then get quite strategic on that. You might start planning for your own development, self-help, self-development, all those things. This is very much the orange zone. It's also about competition. So it's about being the best. You've been better than other people and you've been as good as you can be relative to others. Yeah. So a lot of competition. This essentially is capitalism in many ways. It's modern. I always think of this as like the roaring 1980s. Thatcher going, right, screw the society. There's no such thing. It's all about the individual. We were talking about the miners' strikes the other day. There's a good documentary on there, weren't we, Danny, from the miners' strikes in 1984. And it was like a time warp looking back to the 1980s and that culture. And this was where that clash was coming in. The world was moving from blue to orange. And the miners are coming from that blue community, you know, rules, order, structure, those things. And Thatcher's going, no, we're not having that anymore. And they just couldn't shift with that movement. They just weren't in that mode of thinking at that point. They didn't value those things. They didn't value materialism so much and status and looking good and having a fast car and a bigger house and those things. Orange stage, very materialistic, very much about money, earning a lot of, and having possessions and just that real capitalist boom, I suppose. Very individualistic. Science gets big and rationality and like, yeah, well, everything. Like we've got data for this and everything's objective and there's technological innovation. Things are just growing and moving on quick and it's getting bigger and faster and stronger. That's the orange one and how I see that. A lot of it's quite selfish in some ways, isn't it? It is very self-centered. It's all about you again. So we've shifted over to that left-hand side of the spiral, and that again can have some pros and cons. So there's nothing wrong with being results driven and like setting goals and achieving things and the spirit of the entrepreneur and that side of things, isn't it? It's like, yeah, I'm going to be entrepreneurial and creative. I'm going to innovate and those sorts of things. But that can get flipped into, you can get ruthless. So it's like ruthless ambition and like screw everyone else. I'll happily trample over them to get what I want. So things like integrity can start to wane a little bit. Relationships can get quite transactional. So I'm just looking at you for what you can do for me rather than a genuine community or relationship going on there. Win at all costs, lack of empathy for just other people and their predicaments and how they're feeling. Exploitation, like I say, that's this orange level. And that is probably where most of Western culture is still at the minute. We're very grounded in that orange state, although certain aspects are moving, as we'll see shortly. But yeah, what's orange for you, Danny?
Well, again, so we went, you know, in the cave, beige, in the tribe, purple, in the jungle, red, in society, blue. And then Mrs. Thatcher in England said there's no such thing as society, so it became in the marketplace orange. So it's like, you know, you could say purple were traditions, red was my way, you know, the purple you do the traditional way, red would be my way, blue would be the right way, and then orange becomes the best way. And it really is about success, and it's getting there. And as long as we create success, then, and things get done, it doesn't really matter what the collateral is. It's pragmatic, you would say, predominantly. You know, we built America and America's amazing, so to hell with what the destruction was on the way. You know, it doesn't matter about the previous levels, the yuppies, in the young entrepreneurs and all these things. So yeah, sport, and you might look at the Premier League in football and all that, you know, and Sky, and everything becomes a business and it's all marketplace and it's driven by money, and it's almost like, as long as we're making money and we're were successful, really all the rest doesn't matter. There's no morals and ethics really, when we can say there is. And I think Orange is very cunning because Orange bends rules. It needs the rule structure, but it bends them and sneaks around them to get ahead. And, you know, that's been brilliant because look at all the, you know, as much as the medical industry is, you might say, corrupt and doesn't care about people, look at unbelievable things it's done. Look at the things every industry has done. Flight industry, oil industry, fuel, you know, all these industries that are now getting slated for this other evil, you know, entrepreneur. But they've brought technologies, they've brought improvements. So Orange is fantastic. You see in sports, you know, you got a lot of sports analysis. There's been a boom in coaching. So coaching's an Orange technology. It's how do you get ahead? How do you use new, you know, it's an arms race, Orange. It's like, how do we get the best facilities, the best nutrition, the best equipments, the best coaches, all the things around the rules so we can use them and get ahead? Dave Brailsford in the British cycling system would be like a very Orange type thinker. So in sports that was traditionally probably more purple, blue, red, Orange has come in the last big, you know, last 30 years especially, and ever more so, were really the business mindset. Clive Woodward did it with the England rugby team. It was like, how do we bring business principles, business Orange ideas, entrepreneurial ideas into sport so that we become the best team? And they say on and off the field of play, you know, so everything now becomes like an organization, the finances, the owners have started to be talked about a lot more in sports, the backing, the funding, the systems and all that. So yeah, what I say to players with Orange is, yeah, set your goals. You do want a success. You need energy and so on from that. And you want to win and you want to be world number one. You want to get up the rankings. You want all this success and trophies and all this stuff. However, don't go direct to Orange. And I think this is the problem I've seen. People are fast tracked straight into Orange and the colours underneath just aren't being given the equal attention. So I've got loads of players I know that are brilliantly, like, got all the, you know, technically good, and they've got all the kit and they've got all the gear and all the opportunities. They're in all the best systems, but fundamentally underneath, they've no substance underneath. They don't know how to be angry. They don't know how to be red. They don't know how to do it for sacrifice for no reason but the sport itself. There's no spirit there. It's all kind of done through logic and rationality and so on. Sometimes you get orange. You get a very, like, I'd say America's quite blue orange. You know, you do get these systems and religion and so on into Orange, and obviously green next. You know, a lot of people can be sort of like orange green, but essentially in combat sport and sports where you need to show up, contact sports and things like that, if you just go straight into the Orange and think you can, like, think your way to success and talk your way to it, sport's brilliant because it'll just find you out and just go, nah, mate, you've got to have something about you underneath that. Because you do that, don't you? You lose, you do all that and you keep losing. Yeah. So an Orange will go, oh, there's no feedback, there's no failure, there's just feedback, we'll get there in the end. So that's quite a good positive, you know, modern thinking and psychology in itself. But psychology is almost like an Orange thing. But, you know, when you ask people to be purple or you ask people to be more red, the trouble is Orange people do it. So they say, wow, if I do that, will it make me win? So they use those colours and this spiral dynamics technology to end up winning. Whereas actually genuine purple and genuine red, it comes almost from, like, it doesn't come because it'll make you win in Orange. It just becomes because it's the thing to do and be. So it's almost like you've got to live it down there and genuinely, like, I would play this sport for no, even if I never win another match, because I love doing it and I sacrifice myself for it, and that's fine. I will stand up to myself for no other reason than I will just stand up for myself and I'll value it. I'm not being picked on by anybody and I know how to do it. It's not so it'll make me win. It's just I'll just do that. And that's that authenticity. And when people genuinely have that energy, that's where they're bloody hard to beat in sport and life. And this is what Graves was saying. If you've got these abilities to do these things, you are a psychologically healthy human. You're not trapped in Orange. How many people have we known lately with all these well-being problems and, well, you know, whatever they call it? And on the surface, it all looks great, successful. They've got the holidays, the Facebook, the cars, the likes, the status, all the things that Orange is supposed to make you happy. But underneath, they haven't got that magic, that spirit, that aggression, that assertion, that we, that I. They haven't worked it up, no rules to follow. They're making it all up themselves. And then they wonder why they sometimes struggle with meaning and deeper purpose in life, and they're a bit lost. So they go after more and more and more Orange, bigger this, bigger more of that. It makes them more trapped in Orange. And then possibly possibly jump to green, which is about the collective, thinking that they're getting some sort of virtue by caring about the world. But essentially, they should have gone down the scale back into the basics.
That's where the next shift up comes, isn't it? The next spiral up is into green. So that I often liken that to thinking about that realization that, oh shit, money doesn't actually make me happy. Like having the big house and the big car and that doesn't make me happy. There's more to life to this. And that's where you can get that shift again back to the collective we. So we're now in green, and this is happening more. This is probably the shift that you can see some people making currently. So this is where it's getting back to the community. So it's a very liberal mindset. It's very much about equality, tolerance. It's a very postmodern way of seeing the world. You know, it's about cooperating with each other, helping each other. It's a very, which can end in trouble, a very relativistic way of seeing the world. So it's like there is no such thing as truth. Your truth is your truth and mine is mine. And there is equally valid, which is clear pros and cons to that. The environment's huge here. So it's all about, right, we need to save the planet. We're just custodians and we need to be more sustainable and be more ecological in what we're doing. And again, egalitarian, be more compassionate, be more ethical. So the green movement is growing now, isn't it? We're seeing it across lots of areas of society, not least in, like we mentioned, academia earlier, which I always see as quite a blue, and it was my experience of it being quite a blue stage thing, but it's gone quite green. A lot of progressives are in academia and they're trying to change things the way they are. So this is your hippies, your yoga, meditation, the sort of spirituality starting to come in a little bit more again, but it doesn't really have the real depth of the higher level above with that. And you can see it's generally a positive move, but it creates issues at the minute. So people are having a lot of the culture wars and the woke battles that you see people having is this shift, isn't it? It's people who are in green talking down to people in orange, going like, you lot are a disgrace, you need to think more about the planet and caring about each other, all you care about is yourself. And orange looking at them going, yeah, I don't care about the planet, I just want success for myself, I want to be happy, screw everyone else. So that's where there's a bit of a culture clash at the minute, isn't there?
Yeah, orange would care about the planet if it made them more money.
Yeah.
So if you can put policies in place that make you look like you care about the planet, the world and everybody, because orange is sneaky, you see, it's cunning.
So you see that, I always think with that, you know, the when it's the, what's the week they call it, or the month, where it's about like equity and diversity, inclusion and all those things, and get the rainbow flags going and everything, and you see these really orange companies get, like, they'll change their picture on their social media outlets and they'll change it to the rainbow flag, and it's, and they're really saying, oh yeah, we back these issues and things, but they don't really, they're just thinking, well, that'll help us seem a bit like trendy and cool, so we'll ultimately just make more money. That's really what they're thinking. It's oranges pretending to be green in a way.
Yeah, that we care about the, because green is in the community, not necessarily society, which is more, it's now in this community. So it's like, we are all one, we all deserve an equal voice. And if we don't come together, then we're all going to die because the planet isn't going to be there. So we all, you know, anything below green is destructive to the whole thing. And it's the same in meetings, you know, it'd be like everyone deserves an equal say. And it's this idea that's really killing a lot of people doing their heads in, is equal opportunity, and they want equal outcome. So it's the destruction of hierarchies, which, you know, isn't great. But green is great intent. It's obviously the communal. It's like we, like in the ATP tennis, you know, where they have to want to look after the top 400 players, not just the top 10, top 20. Now, how does everybody all serve each other, and how can we met the money? But if you met the money all equal, then you lose the fire, the fight, you know, that you don't get the games and you don't get the hierarchy. So this, you know, it takes a very, what we look at the second tier thinking, but to incorporate green. But yeah, it's really good intentions, and it is about the whole equal family. And it's apparently one of the, Ken Wilber called it, a lot of the boomeritis people from the 50s and 60s have the luxury to be green. They almost have the luxury to say, oh, let's all just stop oil, you know. And it's like, hang on a minute, mate, you're wearing oil clothes, the world wouldn't even be here without oil. And there's no acknowledgement that it still might be a bit in, like plastic and these things, and you know, it still might be important to these people in certain places, such as one of the things was that, you know, like veganism, don't kill any animals ever, right? Well, that's okay if you live in certain areas, but you know, and your biology is a certain way. But for example, the Dalai Lama, you know, gets really sick because he lives in Tibet if he doesn't eat fat off animals very quick. He hasn't got a fruitarian DNA, you know, like biology that there might have been out in another area of the world where it was easy, they just grown up with it. So there's so much subtlety, but green gets a little bit sort of very high, the high moral. So you go from this like unethical orange in a way, you know, bend rules, do it, get as long as I make success and look like I'm being ethical. Green's all about ethics and equality and morality. And we've all had those issues, haven't we, and seen those problems. But it is needed in the spiral. Claire Gray would say green is as important as any other colour. But again, if you get stuck in that green, then you're idealistic in there and it can cause all sorts of problems.
And generally, there's, again, healthy aspects. It's nice to be sensitive and empathetic with other people. It's nice to think that people have respectful discourse and share things with each other, cooperate with each other, like get together around things. But there's cons to that as well. So it's like you never really get anything done because everyone's just talking things through because everyone's view is as valid as everyone else's. And it's like, well, hang on, who's going to make a decision here? We need to just get something. You get like decision paralysis in many ways. There's a lot of patronizing, isn't there? So you see a lot of people just talking down at others and just patronizing them. And they tend not to like arguments sometimes as well. So they'll avoid conflict and those knotty issues where there isn't an obvious answer because it ends up in conflict, basically. And you get a lot of absolute truths as well. So it's like, well, hang on, Danny, if I think there's a pink elephant in the sky and I think that's what's like, that's my truth, you have to believe that. That's true because that's what I believe.
Yeah.
And that can just end in all sorts of carnage, can't it?
Yeah, because consensus and harmony and our way is are the main things for green, not the right way, the best way. And you know, it's not, you know, as long as we're all happy, that's the main thing. And yeah, but in some occasions and some situations, that is the last thing we need because we haven't got the time or the resources or the energy to get to that place. It needs doing now, right now, decision lead.
So like the climate one's classic, isn't it? A lot of people, like your classic orange capitalist, will think, don't worry about that. Someone will invent something. Someone will sort it out because it'll be in their interest and they'll be able to profit and make money off it. They'll sort that out. You lot are never going to get to a point where you'll ever innovate and come up with anything because it's all about consensus rather than taking risks and being the guy who's like, or the woman who's going to be the one to.
Yeah, it would be seen as low energy by red and orange. Like you're just floating around there while we're getting on with stuff. All right, we might not be morally brilliant, but at least we've got energy that's going to do something, that's going to change something. You have energy, but you're mainly about firstly getting the peace and the consensus. While you're doing that, we've done something. So it's just, you know, but again, in your daily lives, in sport, that's where I tell players to, you know, like team spirit, don't be the star, you know, let someone else shine, give people a voice when they want to talk, you know, a collective page, being on the same page as a team, even if you're an individual with your coaching team, you know, you've all kind of don't have arguments too, you know, it's not, you don't want to be just green where no one ever has a disagreement, but there is a time and a place to come to a consensus, point the boat in the direction you all have come to an agreement that it's where to go and go that way, particularly in family dynamics and harmonies and so on. If everyone feels that they've been had a little say in the decision, then you can like, okay, and then get to it. And that has to be genuine. You know, you don't just want to pretend you've done the consensus and you haven't really. So yeah, there's room for that. But again, you don't get stuck in that only. It's a trap.
Right. So that brings us to, and maybe we'll finish on this one. So we'll finish on yellow. There is a level above turquoise, but it's maybe a little bit beyond what we need to get into. So all of those stages that we've covered so far are what Graves originally, and they would call that first tier thinking. So they never agree with each other. They're all fighting and opposing each other. And then when you get beyond this green level, this is when you now enter second tier thinking. So the yellow level, and this is very modern. This is only maybe 50 years ago that this started coming in and people are moving towards it. I think the figures you'll see, it's like 1% of the population are at this yellow stage. And this is where things just get a lot more integrative. So you start thinking in systems. You're way more aware of the bigger picture of there being pros and cons and grey areas. And you're much more flexible in your thinking. So you can say, oh, do you know what? I think blue's got a point there, but so has red there and grey. And you can start to see how all these fit together. So it's a much more, or it's a much wiser perspective. It's much more about wisdom. So it's synergistic, you're adaptable, you're perceptive, you're thinking in concepts rather than hard truths and things like that. And it's a bit more, it's just a much freer way of thinking in many ways. It's much more complex, but it's also much freer because you can see all the angles or more of the angles. So these are your best intellectuals. This is people like Einstein who were, you might say, were at this level, at this yellow level. So people here, you're the healthy manifestations of the yellow stage. It's being open-minded, it's being about learning and wanting to learn more and develop and find things out. It's about embracing uncertainty and being comfortable with that and not be worried about if there isn't an obvious answer. You're a lot more tuned into, I would say, the biopsychosocial. So you're, as well as like your head, your heart, your gut, you just tune into all those different thoughts and feelings. Like I said, you're thinking as a system. It doesn't mean you can't make money at yellow. So this is still in that individual sphere, but it might be you're aligning profit and purpose a little bit more in some ways. Again, some of the unhealthy ways here, you might get a little bit indecisive because it's like, well, hang on, it's complex. There's loads of different aspects to this. That can make decision-making hard a little bit. Harder to maybe communicate more complex things. There isn't a simple, well, just do that. There's nuance to things. Might get a little bit arrogant sometimes. You might get a little bit intellectually arrogant way, like, yeah, well, I'm up here, you lot are down there, you're first tier, I'm second tier, me, this is what I'm seeing. So that's yellow, which is, like we said, 1%. I think we've put ourselves in this, Danny, but maybe people are listening and think, no, not a chance, we're not having this. Even saying that sounds quite arrogant, and when we've talked it through, we've kind of gone, yeah, you sort of have to be a little bit to do what we do and be the way we are, even to be having this conversation. I think even Beck and Cowan and perhaps even Graves said, yeah, like spiral dynamics basically is a yellow stage thing, isn't it? Just as a concept, as a theory. Yeah. So yeah, what are you thinking yellow wise?
Well, for me, yellow is this thing Wilbur said, transcend and include. You know, so you can see all the colours in a way, know that they're all part of a life and a tapestry, and that they all need attention at any point in your life. So we can afford to be yellow in a way now, but let's say we were just...
Are you going on record? Are you admitting?
I think we can. Yeah, maybe we are. I think we are. I think we are, because of the way that we do these podcasts and how we think, and we are pragmatic, relative, and so on. Yellow thinks about the appropriate way, not the best way, not the right way. It's the appropriate way. So there's a lot of like flexibility in that. And it's about also like a functional approach. What is the most sort of functional at the moment? So where green will just say, I'm not bothered about the overall functional effect. We've got to get to a consensus. Yellow can go, no, the red person's right at this particular moment in time. We're all stood around here causing no damage. There's a bully come over. He's going to hit us. And the red person's just gone over and put his hand in his face, said, go back. Don't come near us or I'll hit you. And he saved the day by being red. And I wish I had a bit of red in me like that. No, the blue person did it right, because we were going to dive in and fight them back. But we found the police. We did it the right way. And that's what solved it. So you can see that the functional way at that moment in time. So it's very applied existentially to your situation. And as I say, what this was brilliant about yellow, what Graves, one of his big things was, he said in 1971 that what I find explains best to me the reason that people in yellow behave so much better quantitatively and qualitatively, like time wise and so on, with the time and the life, is because they're simply not as afraid as each of the other colors. They're not as defensive, they're not as afraid, they've dropped off fear. And he said beige is frightened it won't get enough food, or purple's frightened that it will not be safe in the bosom of the tribe, you know, so it needs, you know, it always needs people around. Red's frightened of more powerful people, ultimately. Blue's frightened of God, you know, if I'll get something, I'll be told off if I don't follow the rules. Orange is frightened of not surviving in their own world by themselves independently, as, you know, like an independent entrepreneur and all that stuff, and looking after themselves. And green is frightened of being rejected by society and everybody around, that, you know, the the community. It says, and a useful way of discovering where someone predominantly is to basically say, well, what are you really most frightened of, really, if you were dead honest? Whereas yellow tends to be a bit like, I don't fear that I might be a failure in any of those areas. It wouldn't be practically useful, but it's not on my mind a lot. So I can take or leave going to church. If I leave 3 weeks of going to church, I don't think God's going to send me some, you know, like I've broke the rules and I'm a bad person morally. I can be a bit orange and success oriented and set goals, but it might fail. So what? I had a go. It doesn't matter. I can be a bit green and say, yeah, I'm going to try vegetarian. I'm going to be green. I'm going to talk. I'm going to let everybody have a say. I'm going to even do some recycling and some environmental things. Join a community group. But it doesn't mean like that's the answer to everything. Like, and if I don't keep that up, I'm a bad person and everyone's going to reject me. Purple superstitions, you know, and things. It's like, well, I like doing superstitions and rituals and being a bit daft and, you know, having certain habits and things I do. And because, you know, fate will be nice and the gods will be nice to me if I signal to a magpie or I tie my shoelaces in the right order or you know, whatever, all your little silly things. But if you can't do them, you don't freak out and think, oh, I'm definitely going to get bad luck now. I never did that. You know, so yellow just like doesn't have, it's not as needy. It's not looking for a certain answer as much. It knows that it's complicated. It knows that there's a lot of variety in the world and therefore doesn't judge people as much either for where they're at. You know, if they have to be red at a certain time or if they're going through that stage or if they have to be purple, you know, or they have to be a bit more, or you kind of go, oh, you're getting trapped in that. But you can understand why, given the environment that they've been thrown into and then brought up in. I think yellow cuts people slack for why they are the way they are, but doesn't apologize for them and says, well, you could be moving this on. So therefore, yellow starts by doing that in themselves. Yellow understands that they're true and they're partially true. Yellow understands that not everybody is completely wrong. You know, it understands that there's scientific ways to look at things. There's non-scientific feelings and subjective opinions about things. It knows that there's a lot more stuff going on out there in the world than just, oh, you've just got to be in this color and that's the answer to everything.
So there we go. That is spiral dynamic. There is a level above, which is turquoise, which again swings back to more the collective. That's your holistic, isn't it? It's a worldview. It's a global, Buddha, Jesus level, self-transcending. Which is another whole, but way more holistic in many ways.
Yeah.
But I think in practical terms, yellow's the one that I think a lot of people could definitely look at and go, all right, for me, this is a great reflective tool. It's like, right, where am I? Being honest, I think the rule of thumb generally that people say is whichever level you think you are, you're generally two levels lower, don't they?
Mm.
People tend to overestimate where they are on the spiral. So it's a genuinely useful reflective tool, right? Where am I here? Where are my gaps? Where are my blockages? Have I got stuck in one way? It's not a definitive thing. You are not just right, that's blue and that's it. There's going to be merging and blurring with others, isn't there? So it's like, just generally, where do I sit here? And then you can start to look around, like family, friends, partners, work colleagues. You might be a leader leading teams. Like, what are my people like? Where do they sit within this? And it's just a useful structure to start recognizing, for me, definitely, like where you can maybe move towards them a bit, where you can try and bring them up. Maybe you can help them descend down a little bit because there's stages they've just missed and they've jumped, say, straight to orange, like you were saying.
Yeah.
It's just a useful mechanism, isn't it, to start reflecting and thinking, right, where am I at? Where have I got stuck? And that's how I see it. So let's leave the last word with you. Practical. We're going to cook some rice. What are we going to actually do with this? We've talked about it. But what would you have people do with it when they move up from this podcast?
Just go and read a little bit around it so that you kind of understand it a bit better than just listening to this, because if it's interested, yeah. And then when you do understand it a little bit, then you can go, right, I wonder which colour I'm missing a bit. Some people find like they go back to church and think, oh, actually, I've only go once a week, which really helped my life, that order and reading the Bible again or something. Some people haven't bent the rules for a while and they're too strict with themselves and fundamental, so they need to do orange. Some people are missing out on community. They don't do enough green. They're too selfish and they've not given enough back for genuine sake. The one I do find the most, you know, red and assertion, if you feel like you get trampled on and you can't stand up for yourself in all sorts of situations, you know, quite British really, you know, you're always apologetic and so, you know, just assert yourself sometimes and that's a big one for a lot of people who struggle to voice their what they want to do in meetings and say what they really feel. So that could be, you know, without these things all going on, and you can cause your proper like serious mental disturbances because you're repressing a lot of stuff. I think what's nice, I think we all like Christmas time, birthdays, you know, things like that. Yeah, it could just be an orange marketing thing, but sometimes it's nice to do rituals and superstitions and purple, you know, little things like cards and bringing a cup of tea in bed.
Yeah, we are doing this on Valentine's Day. You said, have you got a card? I was like, not a chance. I'm not falling into that orange trap.
Yeah.
The marketers flipping.
An orange mindset can go, yeah, I'm not losing my money. The guy ripping me off because I'm the text one to no one. But sometimes in purple, you go, actually, yeah, but I know it's silly buying flowers. It doesn't, but it's nice. It's a little bit of glue that keeps things a little bit bouncy and magic and funny, and it's not rational. And I think we all get so rational with the media, the news, the light, everything's hitting you all the time. You know, having children helps you with that a bit, you know, in terms of like being around them and coaching kids and hanging around kids, because everything's a bit more magic and weird and mysterious. So being a bit like that, I know Nietzsche said return to the child, you know, after the lion, that he's obviously getting at levels of life and things, but I think that's a big thing for me. Yeah, just pick the area that you think you might be a bit lacking and just try and find two ways that week that you can do a bit more of that color, and at least that takes you more towards a yellow kind of idea.
There we go, let's leave it at that.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound, and therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red, this is green, this is something. This is nothing, this is solid, this is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.